Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we discuss the relentless pursuit of ROI. Yes, that's right, return on investment and return on inflation. We have a changing future with monetary policy and fiscal policy the way it is, and we need to prepare for it as investors by structuring our transactions differently, and we will talk about that on this episode and future episodes, of course. So we will be back with a fantastic interview for you and a guest today in just less than 60 seconds. Stay tuned.
Are you ready to begin making huge profits in mobile homes and mobile home parks? If so, check out Mobile Home University's Boot Camp in a Box. You'll learn how to find and evaluate mobile homes and mobile home parks, how to drastically reduce park expenses, how to develop an effective management team, how to market and advertise to fill up your park, and much more. The Mobile Home University Boot Camp in a Box is available at special savings at jasonhartman.com.
My pleasure to welcome you to the Commercial Real Estate Investing Show. My name is Jason Hartman, your host, and I'm here with Tim and Marisa, and we're going to talk today about adding value to your properties. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you?
Good, good. Marisa?
I'm doing fine. Thank you very much.
How's the market treating you guys out there?
So far, so good. This is looking to be a very exciting year.
Yeah, I think so, too. There's a lot of exciting opportunities. I think some asset classes still have a lot of trouble ahead of them. And when I say that, I'm referring to retail, some of the industrial segments, and I think office has quite a few challenges.
I would have to agree.
It seems like structurally, the whole workforce has really changed so much, hasn't it, Tim? Because with office properties, we've got so many home-based people nowadays.
Telecommuting.
Fortune 1000 companies are doing it like crazy. With all of the conveniences with Skype and all the other technologies and so forth, it's really quite easy to do. And not just that, you look at the industrial segment and the manufacturing has been largely outsourced to China. And by the way, it's interesting. I just was hearing a news report the other day about how the U.S. still actually, believe it or not, leads the world in manufacturing. But if they don't get off the business's case in terms of all these environmental restrictions and OSHA and regulatory requirements and so forth, China's definitely going to overtake us. But most people would think China has already overtaken us, and that's actually not quite true yet.
I would have thought that too.
Yeah. And so the asset classes that are really my favorite, and I think they're yours as well, are self-storage, mobile home parks, and multifamily. I like housing. I'm a real housing bull because everybody needs a place to live and the population is increasing. Any other thoughts on the market out there before we get into today's topic?
I'm not sure what's driving it, but I know that in my apartments, I'm seeing my occupancy rise, and even to the point where we're starting to see rent increases in some of our properties. So that's a good sign. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and I would say that's very consistent with everything I'm hearing in the industry. Everything I'm reading is that the multifamily is just faring the economic downturn quite well. A lot of people getting foreclosed on, having to move down to apartments and all that kind of stuff. So that's really changed things and kept the apartments doing fairly well. Marisa?
Yeah, you bring up a really good point, Jason. I was just going to say the same thing. I think with so many foreclosures that have been presented, you can, you know, most definitely attribute the high rental percentage to that. You have a lot of people that are downscaling from owning their own homes to needing to go out and rent. And so everything's just kind of trickling downward. And I definitely think that has something to do with just the stability in the rental market.
No question about it. You add to that Gen Y, which is the largest demographic cohort in American history, larger than the baby boomers ever so slightly. 76 million baby boomers, 80 million Gen Yers, they're coming into their prime rental years. So that's really good for multifamily. Also, the only problem with Gen Y is that unlike prior generations, they actually like their parents. So they seem to be staying at home a lot longer, don't they?
I think you're right. I know a few of my friends that have actually moved back in with their parents. That's kind of scary.
That's what we call the boomerang effect.
Exactly.
Yeah, the kids that just won't leave. Yeah. And it's tough out there for them nowadays. So that's certainly an impact. And one of the things that I think it's very hard to quantify is what I call the doubling up factor. And as times get tough, we'll see more roommate scenarios. I know of a friend of mine who's married. They have a kid and they also have a roommate. So even couples with a person renting a room. So that wouldn't happen in better economic times. And it is hard to quantify, but overall, the big trend, the mega trend is we have an increasing population. We do have a shortage of low-priced rental housing.
Affordable housing.
Sure. And I think the other factor with that in the foreclosures, if more of the foreclosures would just cycle through the darn system, and they're going all too slow because it's politically unpopular to see people kicked out of their houses, of course, and every politician wants to pander to their constituents and keep people in their houses even if they never deserved to own that house in the beginning and they never could afford that house, etc. If the foreclosures would just speed up, it would really improve the rental market, the multifamily market, and the mobile home park market even more dramatically than it already has.
I think it would also shorten the recovery time. I think all of the only thing that the government intervention is accomplishing is extending the period of time of these foreclosures. I don't think it's helping the market at all.
Couldn't agree more. And in other parts of the economy, I think it's the same way, because what the government does is they make it a slow, long, dragged out pain instead of just nobody ever wants to take their medicine and just have it over with. I mean, we'd probably be well into a recovery now if it wasn't for the series of bailouts, QE1, QE2. And then, of course, we're going to see a lot of inflation, which is going to be fantastic for real estate investors.
Yes.
When you look at your properties, I mean, think about it. Think about the ingredients that build an apartment building, for example. The sticks and the bricks, the commodities, those are all commodities that are used and traded around the world. You've got glass, you've got steel, you've got lumber, you've got copper wire, you've got loads of petroleum products, concrete, all of that stuff. And then, of course, labor, too. And labor's gotten a little bit cheaper for sure. But those other commodities are really increasing in price pretty dramatically. And as inflation trickles down more and more through the system in the coming years, investors now can buy properties for below the cost of construction, below replacement cost.
They can get fantastic
buildings, can't they?
Yes.
So really, really good opportunities now. Let's talk about how people can add value to their properties. Your thoughts, Tim?
There's really just two basic ways. You either have to increase the amount of income that your property gets, or you have to decrease the amount of expenses that it takes to run your property. That's the basics of it.
Augment your means or diminish your wants, as Benjamin Franklin advised, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Why don't we take the first part? And I think that this is the part that investors can really seize right away, because when they look at a deal, they look at the cap rate, and that's a function of the reported expenses. Now, the seller is obviously going to want to understate expenses, but many times sellers have really mismanaged their properties, haven't they?
I would say that that's the most common thing that we see.
Yeah. And you've got a great example. I want to ask you about this one specifically when you're ready to talk about it, about, I believe it was one of your buildings in Memphis, which is an area you don't like. I know that, but you really decrease the expenses on that property in a pretty unique way that wouldn't have been thought of by many people. So let's drill down on the expense side of it first, if we can.
Sure. Sure. I really like being creative. I think that perhaps the building that you were thinking of is, I have a building in Jackson, Mississippi, and I love Jackson. I really enjoy Jackson.
Sorry, thought it was Memphis. Apologies to Elvis.
But yeah, we had a water bill, water and sewer bill of about $5,000 a month on an 81-unit building in Jackson. And they had the old 6-gallon per flush toilets. They had the plain non-water-saving shower heads. And so we spent about $150 a unit putting in the 1.2-gallon per flush toilets instead of the 6-gallon, and we put on the water-saving shower heads, and we cut our water bill in half. So we saved about $2,500 a month on that building, or about $30,000 a year, and on a 10 cap rate, we increased the value of that property by about $300,000, and we spent about $12,000 to do that, and the savings were immediate.
That actually wasn't the example I was referring to.
Ah.
I was referring to the one where you donated the lot to the city and got rid of the maintenance headache of this lot.
Yes, that one was actually also in Mississippi, and there was a 2-acre piece of land that was adjacent to our property that was included in the purchase of the property. And it was a bit of a hassle. We had to mow it every summer. And there were 6 months out of the year. We had to spend $600 a month to mow it. We were paying property taxes on that land, and there was no benefit at all to us. And so we asked the city if they would like to have that land donated to them. We got a tremendous tax break, and we no longer had to spend $600 a month on mowing the grass and dealing with the snakes and everything else that lived in there. So we saved quite a bit of money.
Are you talking about the tenants?
No, actually, our tenants...
Oh, they weren't the snakes? Okay.
No. Our tenants were actually... we have some pretty good tenants in that building. It's the building has been made very nice, and we've been able to attract and retain some pretty good tenants in there. And now we don't have the maintenance of the land, and the city gave us a nice tax break because of our donation, and we decreased our property taxes as well. So, yeah, that was just another example of how to be creative.
I mean, everybody listening, though, Tim, is going to say, wouldn't it have been better to sell off that land, to develop that land? There wasn't a better opportunity than just giving it to the city.
Well, the land was zoned multi-tenant. It was where our apartment was. The problem is it was behind our apartment building. There were no roads back there.
Oh, you had an ingress-egress problem.
Exactly.
Right,
and the city would not allow us to build any more apartment units there. So it really wasn't, there wasn't anything that we could do with that.
Oh, that was Jackson. Yeah, Jackson is very, very strict about limiting multifamily there, which
right.
makes it a good rental market.
Yeah, we were happy to have bought that building when we did.
Excellent. Other thoughts on reducing expenses?
I think there's so many different ways to reduce expenses. I mean, right off the cuff, Tim expresses some incredible ways, just things that you don't even think about in terms of just reducing overall costs in terms of your water utilities, et cetera. One of the things that some of the main expenses are your taxes, your management, insurance. And I found that oftentimes when you acquire a property, you know, just going back to those basic things, maybe going back to the city and having your taxes reevaluated is a big component that a lot of people don't typically look at.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Getting a reassessment, and also,
exactly.
You're probably going to bring it up, but cost segregation.
Absolutely.
Too. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Go on.
And also management, really making sure that you've got, a lot of times people pick up a property and just go with the existing management in place because they feel comfortable with it. It's a company that's often been with the property for several years, and really taking a look at what other management companies are in the area, taking the time to do that research and find out what management companies are being successful. Looking at some of your neighbors, your competitors, and finding out who they're using, and really getting a good idea of what sort of deals they're offering in terms of what all is composed in that management fee that you're paying for. Insurance as well. Really looking around and pricing your insurance out. That's a huge one that I find that a lot of owners don't really look too much into. They take what they have that's existing, and they don't do a comparison shop. So those are just some of the basic things, like right off the cuff, that are huge. They save you thousands and thousands of dollars a year.
Right. And this point, really, for anybody listening, this is a very important show. If you have a property, of course, to make your property perform better today. But if you are packaging your property to sell, this is incredibly important information we're talking about today.
One of the other things that I'd like to say about insurance is talk with your insurance company about ways of reducing your rates. For us on the Memphis project, for example, we installed 16 video cameras. It really wasn't expensive, and that dropped our insurance rates down pretty substantially, almost to the point of where the reduction in the amount of insurance that we were paying pretty much paid for the cameras. The other nice benefit of having the cameras up there was that the tenants felt more safe, and we were able to attract better tenants as well.
Very good point.
So also putting up lights. We used a lot of and converted a lot of our lights over to compact fluorescent just because of the savings in the electric bill. And it's a noticeable savings.
Very good point. The last part of expenses may or may not play into really the sale of the property so much as it plays into the owner's tax picture. And that is what I mentioned a moment ago, which is cost segregation. And cost segregation can really help accelerate the tax benefits on a building, because what it allows the owner to do is accelerate the depreciation schedule. Of course, depreciation is the very best tax benefit on planet Earth because it's a non-cash write-off or a phantom write-off. And as such, it would be on the schedule of either 27.5 years or 39 years. And what this can do is you can take certain components of the property, for example, the HVAC systems, appliances within the property, and other items, and you put those on a shorter depreciation schedule and really, really increase your tax benefit. And I am finding that many, many owners are quite careless about this. And it's odd how our nature is as human beings. If we want to buy a new car, we'll go online, we'll spend hours and hours looking for the right deal, we'll drive around town or whatever it is. But here we have this building that we own, and we could save thousands and thousands of dollars, maybe even more than that every year, maybe tens of thousands of dollars in terms of our tax bill. And yet we don't do anything about it. It's really a shame. And the most patriotic thing you could probably do is give the monster called government less money, because then it right. would have to stay more lean and run more efficiently.
Right. I'm surprised at how many people don't take advantage of this one thing that would just put so much more money back in their pockets every year.
It really would. What are your thoughts about the cost segregation? I mean, there are companies out there that do these analyses for you. Maybe one CPA can do it.
Yeah, my accountant does it all for me. I'm so glad I don't have to do it myself, because it can be complicated when you consider that every item has its own depreciation schedule. It's too much for my brain.
Right. Usually 5 to 7 years. Now, one of the things that I learned recently when we locked up a mobile home park in Oklahoma, and it was looking like a pretty good deal. We were in the due diligence process, and I did not know this at the time. It really turned out to be much better than I thought. Street improvements, infrastructure improvements can be depreciated over 15 years. Mm-hmm. That was pretty awesome. So if you have those streets and those streetlights within the park, within that community, 15-year schedule. Better than residential, and so far residential at 27 and a half years has always really been the best depreciation schedule at all, because we don't have accelerated cost recovery anymore.
Now, if we could just get them to depreciate the land.
Yeah, well, the land actually in real life has depreciated in many places. So, but unfortunately, they don't depreciate land. Other thoughts on cost segregation?
No, I like it, and I think that more people should use it.
Absolutely. And then, of course, Marisa, you mentioned getting the taxes reassessed through the county and that local municipality, and that's a very good idea, no question about it, because many owners are paying based on an old value.
Absolutely.
And they can save a lot of money.
And, you know, I think it's something that's oftentimes overlooked. I mean, especially in today's market, a lot of investors are picking up properties and they're not even thinking to go to the city and have that property readjusted. And that's significant savings.
And cities will do it for you.
Absolutely.
You know, it takes some time. You can do it yourself. You can hire a company to do it. Some of the companies charge a flat fee plus a percentage of the savings. And there are options out there. So just look online and consider your options. Talk to your experts, your CPA, so forth. Let me take a brief pause. We'll be back in just a minute.
Here's your chance to catch up on all of those Creating Wealth shows that you've missed. There's a 3-book set with shows 1 through 60, all digital download. You save $94 by buying this 3-book set. Go ahead and get these advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com.
Let's talk a little bit about the upside now. Saving, you can only take savings so far, right? We really want to talk about increasing revenue. Maybe the first area applies to multifamily, applies to mobile home parks, and it's sort of an easy one, but a lot of people can sort of forget about it. Well, two areas, submetering and laundry.
We had a 100-unit apartment building, and there was no laundry facility on the premises. There was a laundry facility down the street, and it had closed. And when we surveyed our tenants, we found that the number one thing they wanted was laundry. And so we took one of the one-bedroom units and gutted it and turned it into a laundry facility. And then we also added mailboxes, and we also added vending machines and video games. And we were collecting about $700 a month, about $700 a week in revenue from that one-unit apartment building that was only getting about $400 a month when it was a one-bedroom apartment. So we were quite surprised at how much revenue that one unit was generating.
That is really amazing. So at first, an owner might think, well, they're losing the revenue of that one-bedroom apartment, but the laundry really creates a much higher revenue stream, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was actually, we were quite surprised. It got to be a little bit more to manage than we had expected, and we found a laundry company that came in, gave us a $10,000 check, and they give us 60% of whatever they collect. They fix all the machines, they take care of all the collections, they do everything for us. So that turned out to be a pretty good deal for us as well.
I think a lot of owner-operators would perceive that as a big hassle. I'm going to put in laundry, machines are going to be breaking down all the time, but really can just be outsourced.
Yes.
You want to talk about submetering?
Sure.
So submetering, this comes into play, it's frequently done on mobile home parks. It's a little bit harder probably on apartment buildings, but you can install separate meters for utilities mm-hmm. for each unit.
Right.
And this small thing can really dramatically, well, it can increase revenue. I don't want to say dramatically, but that turns into a dramatic increase in value of the property, doesn't it?
Sure, sure. Well, if you take into consideration that people are going to use less of their utilities if they're paying for it, there is a happy medium in there between what the landlord pays for the utilities and what the tenant will ultimately pay for the utilities if they're careful. And so what you want to do is you want to decrease the rent a little bit to help the tenant offset them paying for their own utilities. But you can still do it to the point where you're, as a landlord, you're actually making more money by having your tenant pay their own utilities. Another thing that I really like, and this kind of goes along with having the landlord pay the utilities, it's kind of the opposite of what we're talking about. My building in Jackson, 81-unit building, we had satellite dishes all over the place. Each building probably had 7 or 8 satellite dishes stuck on the outside, and all the tenants were paying about $50 a month for cable TV. And I really hated seeing all those dishes stuck on the sides of the buildings. And so I called the satellite company and said, can we have one dish put on the property and we have everybody get their satellite feed from that? And they said, sure. And I said, great. What's it going to cost? And they said $15 a unit. So what we did is we increased the rent to the tenants by $40, so they got a $10 savings. We paid the $15, and we netted $25 per unit.
That's a great deal. So you're really doing your tenants a favor. You're bringing to them group buying power, and you're also increasing the revenue of the building.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I think also one thing to consider, too, is just small little appliances. I know you mentioned driving the value of the property is just little amenities that really make your complex stand out from its competitors. For example, in the complex that I have out in Charlotte, North Carolina, there's a lot of kids that are in the complex, and our managers brought to our attention that it would be a really good idea. There's a big lot behind it. If we put some gravel and put an area for the kids to play, you know, a little slide, a swing set, what have you. And just really being able to create that family ambiance to where you're attracting those types of tenants. You know, there's longevity when you have a family that can stay in your unit, and they'll stay there for quite a while. Little things like that, or, you know, simple things like putting ceiling fans or just the little amenities that you like to see in your dwelling space. Mm-hmm. Those things allow you to increase your rent an extra $25, $30, and, you know, that stuff goes a long way.
Sure.
It just puts you, it primes you ahead of your competition.
Yeah, no question about it. Let's talk about some of the math of the way this works. And when we look at the math, I mean, if we reduce expenses by X amount, if we increase income by X amount, what does it do to the value of the property?
Yeah, I can give you a couple of examples. For example, when we were saving the water on our building in Jackson, we were able to save about $2,500 a month. That's $30,000 a year. And if you figure a building sells at a 10 cap, which, you know, is the average for now.
Not in places like California.
No, but in Jackson, Mississippi,
right.
A 10 cap is very common. So if you divide that number by 10%, you just increase the value of the building by $300,000. And we did that by replacing the toilets. The toilets, we bought them in bulk for about $120 a piece. The shower heads were $6 a piece, and we paid about $25 to our maintenance guy to do the install. So it came to about $150 a piece per unit, 80 units. It worked out very well. We paid $12,000 and we increased the building by $300,000.
Okay, so $12,000 to save $30,000 a year, 10 cap, increases
right.
The value of the building by $300,000.
Correct.
Folks, I mean, are you really, really paying attention to your expenses? And are you really, really paying attention to your income? It is just critical. If you can get that delta between expenses and income to increase in the right direction, of course, you can really increase the value of your project dramatically. That is one of the just the incredible multiplier effects.
Well, and I had a conversation with a friend of mine. I went into one of my buildings, probably spent about $200 on compact fluorescent light bulbs, and I put them in, you know, everybody has a light right outside their door, and so I went around and stuck them all over the building, and I had a friend say, why would you do that? That money, it's going to cost you, or it's going to take you probably 10 to 12 months to get that money back. And I said, no, you don't understand. The decrease in the cost of the electricity, you have to multiply that by 10, the savings, to tell you what your building is now going to be worth because of the savings in the electric bills. You reduced your expenses. That reduction gives you 10 times the value. So that $250 might have taken me a year to get that money back on the electric bill, but it probably increased the value of my building by $25,000.
So I think the dilemma that comes into play for landlords occasionally is if they're not selling the property, and obviously we're not in a good refinance market, at least for cash out refinancing, there's the issue of how do they really harvest that value increase? Most buyers are looking for a 2-year expense track record, probably. Depends on the buyer and how sophisticated they are, maybe 3 years. Maurice is holding up a 3 here in front of me just because you can't all see that. So 3 years, really they need to start planning in advance. I mean, start saving that money or increasing that income today so that you can sell your property in 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Well, here's another example.
You can't just do this 3 months before you want to sell the property. It doesn't work.
Right. You've got to have a track record. Another example would be if you install, let's say your units didn't have dishwashers and it was going to cost about $200 to buy a dishwasher and to have it installed. Well, it might increase your rent only by $10 a month. Well, that's $120 a year on a 10 cap rate. That's $1,200. So if you can spend $200, put in a dishwasher, it increases the value of your building by $1,200 per unit. That's worth doing. Not only are you getting the increased rent, but you're increasing the value of your building substantially.
And you know, you bring up a really good point that it's not something you can come in and do, you know.
At the last minute.
Yeah, the last minute. Some of my most successful clients have been the ones that have come in, acquired a property, and they've got a plan like in place. Before they even acquire it, they come in, they look at the property, they take a look at the economic factors, and okay, these are the areas that we need to change. This is what we want to do. And they've got projections 5-7 years out in terms of how they're going to turn that property. And it's unbelievable how successful they can be when they come in with a plan of how they're going to reduce their expenses and how they're going to increase their income. And that's by far the best way to do it.
Very good point. Well, this has been a great topic, and we've got a lot of great shows coming up for you on a whole variety of topics related to commercial real estate investing. And anything else you'd like to close with?
Well, I think that the opportunities are out there. You know, if you can find the crummiest building in the best parts of town, and you can go in and properly manage that, manage the expenses, and just be a little creative on enhancing the revenue, you can make millions of dollars doing that. I mean, it's not that difficult. There just aren't that many people out there that are good at it. Another thing that I wanted to mention is if you're new to commercial real estate investing and maybe you want to partner with somebody who's got some experience, from time to time we put group projects together and we invite new investors to come and invest with us and be partners with us. It's a great on-the-job training. You get to get your feet wet while having your water wings on so you don't have to drown in it.
That's a really great way to learn because it doesn't require you to put up all the money. You're not alone and you can learn a lot. You can really, really watch how things are done in terms of deal acquisition and management and the whole thing. And
yeah,
it really gives you a lot of confidence.
And if you just let us know that you're interested in those projects when they become available, we can let you know what they are. And it's really great for people that don't have enough capital, enough time, enough education, enough experience, or enough courage to do it by themselves.
No question about it. And I really want to just make sure all of our listeners go to our website, commercialinvestingcenter.com. That's commercialinvestingcenter.com. And we have got a fantastic blog. You can subscribe to that blog if you're using an RSS reader, which is very easy to do. Or just look at the blog, visit the site, visit the properties on the site. Make sure you're looking at our blog. A lot of great content there. And of course, on future shows, we'll cover many, many topics that will be of great interest in that relentless pursuit of ROI, return on investment. That's what we're here to help you with, and we look forward to talking to you on the next show.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn how to finance your next big real estate deal, there's a show for that. If you want to learn more about food storage and the best way to keep those onions from smelling up everything else, there's a show for that. If you honestly want to know more about business ethics, there's a show for that. And if you just want to get away from it all and need to know something about world travel, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.